Welcome to the Cloud Computing Show, episode number 47. I am here with Thomas Peterson, the CEO of OneLogin. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Gary.
And I'm Gary Orenstein, host of the Cloud Computing Show. We'll jump right into the industry news. Big acquisition. Well, I don't actually think it was a big acquisition in terms of monetary value, but big in terms of just generating some news and noise in the big data arena. HP bought Vertica, which coincidentally I had heard the week before at a conference that Vertica was sort of, you know, it wasn't clear what was going to happen. I don't think that was a sign necessarily that they were going gangbusters. I don't know. This is all just hearsay. But HP decided to pick them up to get into the game. Thomas, just before we started, you mentioned you had some experience using the product. What was your take on that deal?
Well, I'm a database guy, and I was very fascinated by column database technology. Which is, you know, what Vertica is. So at a previous company, I evaluated both Vertica and the competitor Infobright, who decided to go open source, which probably meant that they weren't tracking the way that Vertica was. So I think it's very interesting. And Teradata, which is one of the big database warehouse
vendors. Yeah, they're sort of like a giant.
Right. They actually recently implementing some column database features. So they could see that you know, they could gain some advantages doing that. So I think HP probably realized that column technology is very critical in this space.
Yeah, and my guess is too that after EMC bought Greenplum and IBM bought Netezza, that they sort of had to make some kind of motion right. to show that they are still in the game with newer technologies yeah. as opposed to you know, older stuff. Now, as far as I know, HP has never had a broad data warehousing, data mining portfolio themselves, have they, or am I missing something?
I think they have a sizable storage business.
Sure.
And they may be providing a lot of hardware to, you know, cluster setups and so on. You know,
right,
Teradata.
But from a software perspective, it really hasn't been much of their background.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. If we're missing something there, let us know. Or if anybody from HP who's covering their new data warehousing initiatives wants to come on to the show, give us a buzz. You know, in line with that story, there has been this theme now about big data and cloud computing merging and being one and the same. We've been talking a lot about cloud computing on the show for the last few years. We talk a lot about big data. I have a background in storage and an interest in this. Are these distinct fields, big data and cloud computing, from your perspective, Thomas? Are they merging? Does it even matter?
Well, I think the important thing is all the big data lives in the cloud, so to speak. And, you know, big companies like Facebook and Twitter and eBay and so on, they have cloud-based businesses. So you can say that the big data lives in the cloud. But even companies, you know, that are growing fast and need to mine very large volumes of data, they don't host the data themselves. They
right.
employ it in Amazon and so on. So I think, you know, it's bound to happen.
Yeah. You know, I was at the Strata conference 2 weeks ago, and Werner Vogels from Amazon gave a definition of big data. And I don't have it exactly, but the definition was anytime that you have to rethink the way that you collect, store, analyze, and process information, anytime that you have to rethink the way that you do it, that's a big data scenario because it's you know, it's different mechanism from what we've had in the past. You could almost use that definition for cloud computing
right.
because the architectural assumptions are so different. So I think the themes of these technology trends are very similar, but I still think they're independent, and I guess I sort of hope that they'll retain some of that independence is my two cents.
Right.
Well, let's jump into the guest Q&A again. Go ahead.
Well, just a last comment. I think it's also important to note that Michael Stonebreaker, who founded Vertica and who's also in the inventor of Postgres, he has a new baby called Jolt or something like that. So it's an in-memory SQL database. And he argues, I saw him at BlueCon last year, and he said, well, Jolt is actually 10 times faster than Cassandra. So it's not really SQL that's a problem. The problem is that that's too much disk I/O.
Yeah.
So that's what he's solving with that problem. So that looks very interesting.
Well, he's always got something going
he's
on.
He's a
right?
very smart guy.
Yeah, so, he's a serial entrepreneur. Yeah. I think he'll be inventing new ways to deal with data until he can't anymore. But it is interesting to see the trends and now to see him, you know, he's always made very controversial statements to get attention, and it'd be interesting to watch what happens there.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's jump into the Q&A. Thanks for joining us, Thomas. Again, Thomas Peterson, the CEO of OneLogin. Just before we get into, you know, a lot of details, just give us one sentence on what OneLogin is all about.
Right. we eliminate passwords, basically. So our average customer uses 30 to 40 different cloud applications, and you can imagine that there's a lot of passwords and URLs to juggle around. But if they sign up with OneLogin, we can eliminate all of those, make it a lot easier to access their data, and make it more secure.
Gotcha. So before we dig into more details about the company, give us a little bit about your background prior to starting OneLogin and sort of what led some of the ideas in your past that led to forming the company.
Sure. Well, I have a background in telco billing. So that means dealing with customers that typically have 100,000 employees or more and where the sales cycles are 18 months or more. So it's like breeding elephants. It takes a long time. And then I was fortunate to join a startup called Zendesk a few years ago. And when they made the foray into the U.S., I was transitioning from Atlanta, of all places, to California. And they say, hey, would you like to make some phone calls to all of these signups we're getting? And then over the next year, I helped Zendesk grow to 3,000 customers. And during that time, I was sort of exposed to some of the challenges our customers had with all the cloud applications they were using.
And Zendesk being a cloud application.
Right, exactly. And, right. You know, one day I received an email from someone saying, well, what are we going to do with this login? I have 15 other applications that I'm using. And then he provided a list. And that was sort of when the light bulb went off.
Right. And, so just for folks who don't know, Zendesk is a cloud-based customer support application.
It's the best.
The best. Yeah, well, we have to get them on the show at some point, too. So being there, of course, gave you access to customers who were very cloud application-centric.
Exactly.
Neat. So when did you actually start the company?
Well, we had the idea almost 2 years ago, April 2009. Mm-hmm. And so we started building a prototype. Mm-hmm. And January 2010, I left Zendesk to go full-time.
Okay. And so now that's, I guess, been about
almost a year.
Year. Yep. Great. So you mentioned you eliminate passwords, which is great. But there are solutions like 1Password, more on the consumer side, if I understand. I haven't used 1Password, but I know a lot of people who rave about it. This is not the same as that.
No.
So, you know, let's dig a little bit deeper into the actual, sort of use of the product from your customer's perspective.
Right. So what we deal with is called enterprise single sign-on. And enterprise single sign-on is something that traditionally has only been available to large enterprises who could afford to pay certain microsystems or computer associates hundreds of thousands or even millions of dollars for an identity management solution. And, it would be installed on-premise and take a long time to implement, and typically it was built for in-house applications or applications that only very large enterprises use, so Taleo and those types of applications. And so what has happened now with enterprise software, you know, everyone talks about the consumerization of enterprise software.
Yep.
And what happens is that many software purchases are made at a departmental level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, customer support says, hey, we want to use Zendesk or whatever, and IT says we want to use Splunk or whatever. And so what happens is especially the small and medium-sized businesses end up using a ton of applications. And because it's so easy to acquire a new application, you don't have to install any hardware, you don't have to talk to IT, and so they die in passwords.
Mm-hmm.
And that affects productivity, but it also affects security.
Right.
You have employees that they use their dog's name for every application. And we see this happening all the time. Twitter got hacked.
Right.
The password happiness, I think everyone is using it, knows now. And
that was, yeah, and I think that was because they were their Gmail passwords were not very secure,
right.
if I recall the details there.
Exactly. And, you know, TechCrunch laid a lot of their information public, was a major embarrassment. Gawker just got hacked recently. We're going to see more and more of these. There's a lot of ways you can secure data, but if you have a really weak password, it's sort of having a fortress with a paper mache door.
Right.
And also, you can easily get phished. And phishing means that someone, a criminal, lures your password from you by giving you a fake login page to an application where you just normally just as a robot enter your password.
As consumers, we see that a lot. Change your eBay account because it needs an update, which is nine times out of ten.
It happened to me once. We actually just launched a site called phishingtest.onelogin.com where you can simulate a phishing attack for a fake Google Apps login page, so you can see how vulnerable you are. And some tests we've done shows that about 25% of all employees fall for it.
Wow.
That's a lot. So the only effective way to prevent a phishing attack from happening is not knowing any passwords. Because if you don't know a password, you can't be tricked into giving it out to someone.
Interesting.
So if you only have one trusted source that you have to remember, one login or your Windows network or whatever network you're on, that's the way to combat phishing.
Gotcha. So I want to dig into those product details a little bit later in our Q&A about not actually having a password.
Sure.
But before we get there, what are the typical customer segments of your first adopters? Is it large companies, small companies, medium size? Is there a bent towards a particular industry? Are there characteristics that you find common across your adopters so far?
So we focus on the small and medium-sized enterprises. So those are the ones to sign up now. And as our own credibility grows, we are able to attract larger and larger customers, and we can definitely see that now. There's no particular segment. It's tech companies, e-commerce companies, brick and mortar, healthcare, pharmaceutical. We just we landed a company last week that sells reused trucking equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 400 people company. We're about to close a pharmaceutical company, publicly listed. So there's no specific category. The only thing they have in common is that they're comfortable using cloud computing.
Right. I like that example of the company selling their reused truck equipment.
Who would have thought that?
Right. I like asking companies that have SaaS services, are there customers that you didn't expect were going to join? And that almost sounds like one. Who would have thought that such a company? But, you find there's one or two people who like using cloud stuff, and it spreads positively like a virus in a company. So,
And that's a company that where most people are not really tech savvy. So if they have one visionary IT guy in there, that can change the entire company.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, just think of the power for that, those kind of businesses. Those stories to me are always fun, the sort of old school businesses meeting some of the new technology.
Right.
So what do you think drives the adoption initially for customers? Is it the organizational hassle of the passwords? Is it the security factor? Is it something else? What is the thing that gets people to not only just sign up, but start doing one of your paid plans?
Right. It really varies because some companies, they don't care about security. They say, yep, it's taken care of. We trust our employees. It's not a concern. Other companies have they're very concerned about security. It could be because of the data that they manage or maybe just their mentality. So sometimes it's security that drives it. Usually, I would say more than security, it's usability, productivity. Users complain about password fatigue. it could be compliance we have no insight into password strength and, we need to be Sarbanes-Oxley compliant or we just, maybe someone came from a company that had to be Sarbanes-Oxley compliant. So it really varies. But one thing that works really well is if a company had an event happening. So we had a customer who signed up recently, not a big customer, but, 60 employees. Someone fired, a mid-manager fired someone, and that person left the company. But before he left, he went straight to his computer, sent a nasty email to all the employees, and took some passwords with him. And the next week, they had rolled out one login to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear about those stories. They don't always tell us about it, but this is something we heard.
Right. So now I want to jump back to a little bit of the product detail. One of the things you mentioned is that users of one login don't even actually know what their passwords are for the different services. Walk us through the experience as an employee at a company using one login and sort of your onboarding process, your first day of work and you're being introduced to the services, but your IT guys are saying we use one lot. How does that actually transpire? Tell us that story.
Right. So I can give a really good example. Yammer is one of our customers, and they're growing really fast. We started talking to them almost a year ago, and David Sachs is also an investor. He subsequently became an investor in the company after they started using it. So I talked to an employee from Yammer, and when we first rolled it out there, they were already using 1Password. And people were a little bit, this is annoying. You know, 1Password works fine. And so it was inconvenient for the existing employees because they had to change the way they do things. One thing that won them over was we can share logins easily. There's a lot of applications that are not multi-user, like FedEx and Twitter, and you know, a lot of tools for monitoring cloud applications and so on. So that was a very easy way for them to share passwords.
Meaning that some of those services, if you had a shared company login,
right,
you help facilitate the sharing of that.
And no one needs to know that password because we automate the login.
Right.
But then this employee I talked to, he said, it's so great to see now when we hire new people, that's just the way we do it. And, you know, they go to the toolbar, they click the one login button, and that's how they log into Google Apps and all the other applications. So now there's never any question because people arrive at work the first day and everything just works.
So you get a one login password.
Yes.
So as an employee, I would know that.
Yes.
And then if we use my company has box.net as an example, my box.net password is assigned sort of behind the scenes by one login, and I have nothing to do with that. Is that how it works?
But we can do it in different ways, and box.net is actually a good example. Before we had what's called a form-based authentication integration to box.net, so we would just automate filling in the username and password. We just integrated using a protocol called SAML, which is sort of the enterprise single sign-on protocol. And that protocol works by establishing trust using digital signatures. So we can sign a user in by just knowing his email address. And so there is no password. And as long as someone has created that user in box.net, that can either be done manually or our application can do it automatically. Then that user can sign in without ever having to know a password. That can be some differences if you have a mobile client that needs a password, but for the
right
version.
But you're saying in that case there actually isn't a password. It's more of this
right
exchange of digital certificates or something between
right
the two companies. Interesting.
And that's what you want to get to. And SAML is a protocol that most companies haven't heard of because it's large enterprise. We can see that changing now. We're getting a lot of requests for it. And once people start using an application that supports SAML, they don't want to go back because it's super fast to sign in and, you know, no security issues.
Right.
It's very smooth.
So last night I was spending a little bit of time on your website. One of the bullets said there's something like 1,200 applications.
1,400 now.
1,400 now.
Yeah.
Changes every day, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Obviously, it doesn't take a tremendous amount of work to integrate a new application. But as you said, there are probably different stages of integration.
Right.
What does it look like for what are those different cases of integration?
So we can integrate in a number of different ways. The easiest way or the fastest way is form-based authentication. So we have a catalog that customers can browse. They can even browse by category. So if they're looking for an expense management solution, they can look in that category. But typically, then they just hook up the apps that they have already. And if that's an application that we don't already integrate with, they can suggest it. You know, ticket is created. One of our supporters adds it within minutes, typically. And we get so many responses back saying, wow, that was really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how our catalog keeps growing. Now, we want to eliminate passwords. So whenever a vendor supports SAML, that's what we need to do. And that can sometimes involve signing an NDA, you know, establishing a partnership. And it can take, depending on how willing they are to cooperate, from a few hours to a few weeks, in worst case. But for instance, with box.net, it was driven by a customer that were very cooperative. And I think in 2 days we had it up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Just not full-time work, but, you know, that was from start to end.
Right.
But the actual work involved was maybe a couple of hours or something like that.
Right. Tell us a little bit about the pricing model and the different plans that are available.
Right. So this is a space where there's a lot of different use cases. So we have a list of official list pricing, $5 per user per month. We sometimes have customers who say, well, but we have so many users, we should have a discount, and then we discuss it. Or they say, well, we only need this for Google Apps, and we don't want to pay as much for single sign-on as we pay for Google Apps. Can you help us? So, you know, we most customers pay less price, but you know, we're flexible.
Right. And if that price, $5 per user per month, is sort of an unlimited use, because I saw on the website sometimes you limit by the number of applications that you
use. Yeah, that's on the free plan. So
okay.
So on the free plan, you can get 5 apps. There's some vendors in the space that charge per application, but because our customers use so many, and we have customers that have 50 or 80 logins
right.
for different applications.
And that's where the benefit of the product really
right.
kicks in. You almost want to encourage people to
Absolutely.
Use more apps because,
you know,
yeah,
exactly. You just get everything. And it's so funny because, again, I want to use Yammer as an example. When I first talked to them about the idea, they said, well, we're not sure we have the need because we use maybe 5 applications. Now they use more than 50. I think it's actually 60 now.
I don't think people actually spend the time to count and realize. I mean, I started a new job a few months ago, and, you know, I start my little text file with my pad. That's where I started, right? And lo and behold, you know, I'm paging through stuff, and it just adds up so quickly. Now, my guess is, for people who buy into the whole one login experience, it accelerates even more. Mm-hmm. By having things so accessible, because you said you provide a directory of some of the applications.
Right.
So people are probably going even faster in terms of their adoption. Plus you're self-selecting for people who have a cloud bent anyway.
Right. And it gets kind of addictive. I haven't answered any passwords for a year and a half now. And I mean, I don't know any of my passwords. So if suddenly our solution broke, I would be screwed.
This is kind of like you know, when we had speed dial on the phones, mm-hmm. and now that we have our address books, like nobody knows anybody's phone number.
Exactly.
So interesting. So you know, you talked a little bit about you know, the application directory, and one of the things that I really like about this kind of business is that there's so much information about, you know, what customers are doing, which apps they're using, what combination of applications they're using, how you can make app discovery more relevant for your users. There's this whole layer of data around the single sign-in that, in my opinion, is potentially more valuable than the actual single sign-in feature. How does that thinking fit into your company, your plans, your strategies? Talk a little bit about that.
Right. So some of these things are obviously very competitive. And I think the limits to what a company at our stage can do, once you've sort of made it, you can do a lot of interesting things. Just think about the iTunes Genius,
mm-hmm. you know,
that looks at what you listen to and what you might
right.
want to listen to.
Exactly.
I mean, we could look at our data and say, well, if you use these two applications, you probably would be interested in this other application
exactly.
as well. Now, we're not at the scale where that makes sense to invest in that kind of thing, but down the road, that's certainly something we can do. And we already do things like whenever someone enters a password, we just before we store it and encrypt it, we calculate the password strength so we can analyze that kind of those things.
Mm-hmm.
We know if people reuse the same password for different applications.
Password behavior.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of psychology behind that.
Exactly. I mean, you can see if some of your employees show bad password behavior because they still have passwords in,
right.
in some cases.
And somebody, one of the things I saw online was that, you know, there's something like 200 or 300 passwords that are very commonly used, and that's the easiest way to break into somebody's mm-hmm. account is try those 200 or 300
right.
passwords that are most common. And then, of course, as you start to know somebody, you can do whatever, family members and,
yeah.
and names and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, are you seeing interesting patterns yet in any of the use that you can talk about or share?
Well, we can certainly see that when people sign up originally, they just try out a few applications, and then they just keep adding. And it's everything from, you know, Salesforce and Google Apps are the usual top one and two. But customers have multiple WordPress accounts
mm-hmm.
because they have they have different websites.
Right.
They answer their CDW account where they purchase stuff, their Dell business account, you know, the FedEx account, all that stuff. And I would say typically almost a third of the applications that they manage are shared logins to applications that are not multi-user.
Mm-hmm. Take an application. I mean, that's a real advantage.
It is. It is. Because normally what happens is if you give out the password to, let's say, your SurveyMonkey account, which is not multi-user, I was really surprised. That's one of our most used apps as well. And it's not multi-user. So that means if you have five people in your marketing department that use SurveyMonkey, you have to give them the password. If someone leaves, you have to change the password and give.
Right, or a lot of sites will make you change the password every 6 months or something, and then you got to update everybody. So it's a real pain to manage.
Right, I would say the only application that I've seen requires that is Salesforce. Most applications have really poor security, and so when we integrate with a form-based authentication, 1 out of 10 times a website sends password over a plain HTTP connection.
Yeah,
even Square.com.
Goodness. Yeah. I don't think they
did. I think they changed it now, but when we integrated first, it was, wow, and this is a payment processor. So we are constantly surprised that, you know, security, unless you have a focus on it, that there's so many missteps you can make.
Yeah, no, I don't think anyone has yet fully. It's kind of like the situation with backup, right? Most people don't back up their photos until they lose some photos.
Right, because they don't have a backup problem.
Yeah, and then you get religion. I'm curious now. Just you said from an individual user. I mean, I could still use one login if
Absolutely.
I wanted to, and just have that as my way to go. And does something get when you talk about using it? Is there something in the browser that gets that's sort of built into this, or how what is the actual mechanics of of it from an end user perspective?
So the reason we have 1,400 applications is because we can integrate to anything. Usually we can integrate without any help from a browser extension, but there are certain sites where they just do not want to be integrated with, if it's a very Ajax-heavy login page, for instance, or if the login page is embedded in a frame or an iframe or something like that. So we have browser extensions for the four major browsers that will assist you, will assist in the automation of the login. But it also places a very convenient padlock in the toolbar that you can click on to get your one login single sign-on portal.
Gotcha.
So you're always just one click away from all your apps. And it's super easy to install, and especially for the modern browsers where you can write JavaScript-based extensions. It's just like 150 kilobytes you can download in a few seconds.
Right.
But we don't store anything locally on a computer, so when you quit your browser, you're completely locked out of everything.
So a lost computer is is not a threat.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's on purpose. Some companies like that solution, but I think that, you know, with, I think it's 70,000 laptops lost every year in the U.S. airports. You want to have it as a little stuff. It's much more secure with us than it will be on your computer.
Sure. Yeah. People don't always think about
it
that way, but it's the reality. Well, people don't. Some people still keep money under their mattress, but most don't.
Well, there's a lot of irrational fear with cloud computing. I remember once when I worked at the Zendesk, we were trying to land a customer, and we were in the beginning. You know, we had to work a little bit harder to land them. And there was one client who decided not to go with the Zendesk. Their biggest concern was that IBM would be able to hack into our data center and steal the data, and then they could ruin their business. And that CEO was probably 60 years old or something like that. Complete irrational fear, but you just can't combat that.
Right. Aside from that kind of irrational fear, are there other things that you find you're constantly having to explain to customers? Mm-hmm. Are there common, misperceptions or things about one login or about the way they run the business?
I would say that's probably the main concern.
Yeah.
You know, the word, what happens if you get hacked? So we recently had a security company doing a penetration test
mm-hmm.
to ensure that we can't be hacked. I mean, there's no guarantees, but that certainly helped.
Right.
It's something we use as a sales tool, and we can also use it to improve our service, as it turned out.
Right.
But I would say that's the main concern with a service like ours. And then there's Europe. So data privacy is not a big thing in the U.S. But European companies and the EU, they have a lot of laws in place, and there are actually some companies in Europe that are not allowed to host data on non-EU soil.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But, you know, it's, I think it depends on who you are. Salesforce still doesn't have a European-based data center. Well, they have a data center, but it's in the U.S., the
right.
one that serves Europe.
Right.
I think it's just a matter of getting big enough.
Right. Neat. Is there anything else we should know about One Login that we didn't talk about, or things that are coming up that you wanted to share with the audience?
Well, we have an awful lot of things coming. We can see that's a very interesting change that's happened over the past year. As I said in the beginning, single sign-on is something that was available to large enterprises traditionally. Now the SMBs are coming around, and they're interested in getting integrated, because they get requests from customers who already use solutions like ours,
mm-hmm.
or are getting more concerned about the security aspect of hosting data in the cloud. And that's a key thing to remember. You know, it's very easy to sign up applications. Sometimes you have no control over who in your organization does it,
right.
and then places your valuable data in the cloud. And before, you would have a firewall that would sort of protect your physical service. That's no longer the case.
Right.
So we are a lot more than single sign-on. We are also a way of giving you some transparency as to what's going on
yeah.
with your data.
You know, I bet there's also just an element of organization and productivity. I mean, mm-hmm. I sponsor the use of some cloud applications in my company, and I'm always fielding questions. Where was the login for this? Where was this? I mean, you know, it's not easy to remember. And mm-hmm. so now, I get, you know, people get sort of a dashboard of their mm-hmm. official apps at their One Login screen. And so even just finding some of
right.
these things over and over again, I've got to imagine that's for some companies, that's with new employees and
Absolutely.
So forth.
I mean, there are apps where this is a classical problem. Take 37 seconds. I can never log
user.
Into my base because it's One Login at projectsapp.com. I can't even remember the URL.
Yeah.
And I can't sign in with my email address. It's a username that I came up with. Is it Thomas or was what did I use here? And I have not reset my password as many times as with Basecamp. It's infuriating. So that's a problem I've solved now.
Is it 37 signals? Is it Basecamp HQ?
Yeah.
You know, they have their launchpad thing, which is not bad, but yeah, I think they suffer from the same problem that Blogger suffered from. You know, Blogspot, Blogger, Blog. You know, they had all these URLs, and it's.
Yeah.
You can't ask too much of end users in this scenario.
No, I think Launchpad is a step in the right direction, but I still have the same problem.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Neat.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all that detail. This is, in my opinion, this is definitely the wave of the future, mm-hmm. and you know, these are problems that you know, we're all facing on a daily basis, and certainly from a business perspective. A scratch pad or a text file of passwords
yeah.
isn't going to last very long. Neat. Well, let's move on to the next couple sections of the show. We try to cover some interesting meetups. One that I am trying to go to next week in the spirit of big data is the HBase meetup. Do you do any work with the HBase,
nope.
Thomas? So that's here in San Francisco. I believe it's sold out, but if folks are interested, they can go to meetup.com and look up HBase. Shows, we just had the Strata conference a couple weeks ago. That was very successful, really a jammed, packed house, a lot of great presentations. I believe most of that is online if you didn't get a chance to see it. And then coming up in the next month in March is the Structure Big Data Show in New York. I will be moderating a panel there titled The Many Faces of MapReduce, Hadoop and Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great lineup, and if you are in New York and can make it, that would be fantastic. Again, I'm sure we'll have some of that content available. Final section of the show where we do cloud tips, favorite products or services cloud-related. Now you, of any guest, probably have the longest list from which to choose here with some 1,400 applications. I almost think that if I'm ever at a loss for a cloud tip, I'm just going to take the liberty now, Thomas, to call you, because sometimes I'm getting them at the last minute. But anyway, here's mine for this week, and then I'll let you go, Thomas. So I was, for a very long time, a huge, huge fan of DimDim.
Okay, which got acquired.
Which got acquired, and boom, you know, it's now all part of Salesforce, and they're dropping their free. And it's really sad. But as the audience knows, I'm always on the search for new presentation and web and screen sharing tools. That's one of my favorite categories. The last one I tried last week with a friend of mine was join.me. Okay. join.me. Ultra simple, ultra light. It does install an application on your computer, but then just gives you a numerical key to exchange with your colleague on the other end of the line, and boom, instant screen sharing. So my cloud tip for this week is join.me, and your cloud tip, Thomas, is?
Yeah, I'm kind of boring here, and tip Zendesk, because I would say, of course, I'm biased because I work there, but by far it has been the most useful application that we use because of the business logic you can customize in there. So we route a lot of customer or inbound requests through Zendesk, and it's so easy to use.
Yeah. Now, some people use Zendesk in conjunction with other applications sometimes. So do you have a little Zendesk ecosystem, or is Zendesk able to cover the bulk of what you need from a customer support perspective?
We also use Snapperbug. Now I think it's called SnapEngage. So we have a live chat on our website and in the application, which is great for customer support. And every time we've had a chat with a customer, it gets submitted as a ticket in Zendesk, so we can search it and we have a record. Mm-hmm. So that works very well. And I think we've integrated Pivotal Tracker. It also has an integration with Zendesk. And we have integrated our own application with Zendesk through the API. So it's true, I think there's about 60 or 70 applications that are integrated with Zendesk right now. So there's a little ecosystem, and it certainly increases the value of the application.
Yeah. Neat. Well, we're going to have to get them on the show at some point this year as well. Well, thanks again, Thomas. Really appreciate you sharing some of the details about OneLogin. What are good places for people to know as far as websites, Twitter addresses, for yourself, for the company, whatever you'd like to share?
Just go to onelogin.com, and it's everything. Everything's there. It's OneLogin on Twitter. And we have a free 30-day trial. And if you have an application that we don't already integrate with, we can get that done in a few minutes typically. And to the vendors out there, we have free SAML toolkits, and we'll happily work with you to single sign on and enable your application.
Oh, that's a nice offer there. That's great. Yeah, hopefully this becomes a growth channel for some of the SaaS vendors.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it drives adoption of your application. And I know these days where the free trials for most applications, if someone actually takes your application and puts them on the single sign-on portal, you know that it's in your face all the time.
Right.
So that actually increases the chances.
Is this the return of the desktop icon?
Well, I use a Mac, so I'm not much for the Windows clutter. I think it certainly is for the enterprise. I mean,
yeah,
it makes it a lot easier.
Well, and it makes it sense. It's better than somebody calling you saying, how do I log into Basecamp?
Yeah.
So, great. And for me, Gary Orenstein, you can find me on Twitter, Gary Orenstein, full name. We also have a cloud computing show address, so that's just cloudshow at Twitter as well. So thanks very much for our listeners. You can visit us online at thecloudcomputingshow.com. You can also email suggestions of future shows or give us any comments at thecloudcomputingshow@gmail.com. And of course, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Just do a search for The Cloud Computing Show, or visit our homepage at thecloudcomputingshow.com, and there's a link on the top right that will take you directly to the iTunes page. Thanks again for joining us, Thomas.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.